become a KBOO board member if you want to help serve our community and put your gifts and talents to good use. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm and fill out an application, or stop by the station to pick up a paper copy. The deadline to apply is July 13th, 2019. We are looking for folks who love KBOO, who are committed to our community, and who want to carry forward KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change. KBOO needs you. Apply today.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock, and coming up next, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show covers politics, history, and this state of the zeitgeist with a liberal dose of your comments.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll host a screening of Motherlode, Thursday, July 11th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Motherlode is a crowdsourced documentary about a new mom's quest to understand and promote the cargo bike movement in a gas-powered, digital, and divided world. This film explores the themes of movement building, activism, and courage to go against the grain. Again, that's the screening of Motherlode, Thursday, July 11th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm, on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 6 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
Hey, good morning. My name's Abe Proctor. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. Radios, for those of you of the younger generation who are perhaps listening to the sound of my voice over the internet, or perhaps are in the future at some point listening to my recorded voice also over the internet, radios are a piece of ancient technology that broadcasts simultaneously the sounds of human voices, of musical instruments, of pretty much anything you want instantaneously through the air, and you can listen, and you can tune your radio to 90.7 FM. You know, this all sounded much better in my head before I started to hear the sound of my voice. Welcome to the show. Joe is not with us this morning. I expect him a little bit later. So, you know, he's a pretty versatile guy. I'm sure he can jump right in to the program. Usually on this show, we come in with a pretty clear idea of what we want to talk about. That is not the case this week. We were chasing a certain story, trying to line up a certain guest to help us out on that story. That didn't happen. We're still hoping that will materialize for next week. But in lieu of that discussion, which I'm not going to get into right now, I would like to do something that we do pretty infrequently on this program, and that is allow you, the listeners, to drive the narrative this morning. And the way you do that is pick up your phone, another piece of ancient technology, dial 503-231-8187. That will connect you directly with this program in real time, during which you can offer your opinions. You can also write to us at the Facebook page. That's a less ancient technology, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. You can also send us a tweet. And I wish more people would do this, because it's a nice, concise way to keep the conversation going. That is at HonestAbe72. So here's what we're doing.
What are we doing?
Who are you? Who are you, and what are you doing on my radio show? That's Joe. Joe's just arriving. Here is what we're doing this week. We're looking for input from you, our listeners. We happen to be at one of these points in history, and when I lay out this construct for you right now, I do so with a grain of salt, because you know, everyone is afflicted with the fierce urgency of now. Are they not, Joe?
I want to know what the deal is with a grain of salt.
Oh, I'm getting there.
Okay.
Yeah, everyone feels that what's going on right now at this moment in time is the most important thing that had ever gone on, right? That's the fierce urgency of now.
Oh.
But I say to you right now that this period in history is a little bit different. We're really at a tipping point in a variety of ways. Things could go get much better. Things could get much, much worse right now, depending on the decisions that are made within the next handful of years.
I don't think things are going to get better. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joe. Thank you for coming
in
today.
Just thought I'd cheer everybody up.
So what we're looking for from you, our listeners, is I want you to call in with an example of something that's going on right now, and I want you to game those out for us. How is this? Could this either turn out for the better or for the worse, and why, and what do you expect, and what does it mean for everybody else? Well, that's what we're looking for this morning.
I think it's very sweet.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I could start off with an example. You want to start off with an example?
Why don't you give us an example? Of which? The bad or the good or the true
good.
Or the beautiful?
Of the good.
Okay.
This last weekend, the Women's World Cup wrapped up.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
That's really good. And I think actually we should just call it the World Cup in this country because our women's
our
team.
Because our men don't do nothing.
No, they're terrible in comparison to the women's team. Now, I think this was a very positive thing for three reasons. And you might be thinking to yourself, well, this is a sporting event, right? What does this have to do with anything? I'm going to explain to you why.
Okay.
Three primary reasons. First of all, on a purely sporting level, it was a magnificent tournament full of all kinds of really great football, particularly from the United States team, which is absolutely magnificent in every phase of the game. Thoroughly dominant, never lost a game, never trailed in a game the entire tournament to win their fourth World Championship. There's only been eight Women's World Cups ever held. The United States has won half of them. This team is magnificent. They play incredible football. They're athletically dominant. They're tactically superior. It is the beautiful game played in its most beautiful sense.
And paid much less than the men.
Paid much less from the men, and I'm going to get to that in just a second. So why is the United States team so dominant? Well, it's not simply a question. It's not just an accident of history. It is a result of deliberate policy enacted several decades ago here in the United States. I'm talking about Title IX. Title IX, which expanded athletic opportunities for women, required that universities offer the same number and amount of money in scholarships for female athletes as they do for male athletes. All of a sudden now, all these activities, which heretofore had been reserved for men and were considered unladylike, all of a sudden were an avenue which young women could pursue and which could potentially finance their own educations.
Yeah.
This was huge, and we're really seeing the ramifications of that several decades down the line. It was a brilliant piece of public policy. We need to do more things like it, more things to shatter glass ceilings, more things to open doors to populations that have been traditionally unrepresented. What has that led to? Besides the absolute dominance of our women's football team, it has led to a lot more women being able to do these, participate in what was a traditionally masculine sphere, and as I mentioned before, use it to finance their education. It is an absolute brilliant, brilliant thing. And thirdly, the reason I think the Women's World Cup is so great is that there was a subtext accompanying it. You're kind of looking whimsically off into the distance, Joe.
Well, I'm depressed.
I know. Well, just hear me out here.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's a subtext around this team and around this tournament. I'm talking in particular about one player, Megan Rapinoe, a very out and proud gay woman, has been for a long time, has made no bones about publicly supporting what are considered to be controversial political positions. She's the only other professional athlete to kneel during the national anthem in support of Colin Kaepernick and his movement. She is an outspoken advocate for LGBTQ rights and for the rights of oppressed communities all over the world. And during the tournament, a video was released on the internet that had been filmed prior to the tournament of Rapinoe, in which responding to the question of whether she would attend or visit the White House should the U.S. team win, she said, "No, there's no bleeping way I'm going to the White House," she said.
Oh.
Yeah, which of course prompted a Twitter tirade from the President of the United States. But she again was unapologetic about it. And her team, every member of the 23-player squad and the coaching staff lined up squarely behind her in that. There was no dissent. And they all said, "No, we're not going to do it." And that was really pretty impressive. And this is important, I think, and not just in the context of American politics, but in that we saw this group of women who performed so magnificently in a realm that has been traditionally male, and they won, and they were loud, and they were proud, and they were unapologetic, and they owned their mastery of the pitch, and they did it in a way with an exuberance that we really haven't seen a whole lot of in our history, and it was inspiring and wonderful and beautiful to see. And at the end of that final game, after the United States received its trophy and its winner's medals, about half of that stadium in France joined them in chanting equal pay, equal pay.
Right.
It was fantastic because, as you mentioned earlier, this team, despite being the absolute best in the world by a wide margin, is paid peanuts compared to what our middling men's team is paid.
Yeah, but they're men.
Yeah, well, who cares? And finally, on a large scale, the rest of the world is going, well, who cares?
Really?
And let's hope that this push for equal pay by this team of athletes can carry over into other realms of commerce and industry. And finally, we start paying women the same as we pay men. It's absolutely absurd that we don't.
Well, so, of course it is. But look at all the money being saved by the large corporate interests.
What, the money on salaries being saved by large corporate interests?
Yeah, yeah.
No, not really. The men's team or the women's team actually out-earns the men's team in terms of revenue, in terms of marketing and merchandising, and in terms of attendance.
Oh.
It's a better moneymaker than the men's team.
Oh.
So they're actually losing money by paying those guys more than what they're paying the women.
So this would be like an example of pure sexism.
Pure, unvarnished sexism, Joe.
Oh.
And it is cracking. The whole point of this this last little tirade is that that is cracking, finally. And it's good to see. And I think this might turn out very well.
Well, I think it's good. I think I'm not much into professional sports, as you might know.
I know.
But I think it is really fun, and I think it is really stupid. The whole United States approach to the world at this point, under the leadership of the great ghost of the past, who is the leader of the free world.
Ha. Who's the great ghost of the past?
Trump.
He's not dead. He's not dead yet.
You don't know that he's not dead. You don't know that he's dead. You don't know that he's alive.
He tweets. He tweets, therefore he is.
Okay, all right. You're right. I would like to think that... Never mind.
All right. So that's one example of something that's going well and could turn out much better.
Yeah. That's cool. So you made a good argument.
Oh, well, thank you.
Praise unto thee.
Oh, thank you. Well, praise unto that team. They are magnificent.
Well, they were, and I actually watched it.
Yeah, that was very cool.
Okay.
Let's go to the phones. George, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I would like to mention an issue that really disproportionately affects the number of women in this world and in every country. And a few weeks ago, I bought a book at the library bookstore, and it's by a guy named Gary Fuller, who's a British expert on air pollution, and it's called The Invisible Killer, The Rising Global Threat of Air Pollution and How We Can Fight Back. And he mentions one thing I just want to say on the line, that about 95% of humanity, and I guess that includes a lot of people in Oregon, I suppose, is living... breathing air which does not meet the minimum World Health Organization requirements. And he cites a lot of sources of these, the chemicals and other things in the air that are not good for us. And he says the main ones have to do with heating, not only coal heating, but oil heating. And I guess that those are the two main ones. And with transportation, where unless the transporting vehicles are burning something like natural gas, they're probably burning something that's putting a lot more of the poisons in the air.
Are you going to take my GTO away?
Well, no. If you got an electric car, I think he would say, Gary Fuller would say, that's wonderful. Is that what you meant?
No, but it's. I'm just being argumentative, and I'm feeling incredibly sad. And everybody should have it in their heart to make me feel better.
Well,
that's my ego trip of the day.
I'd just say one thing. If we follow what Gary Fuller is saying, which is that we've got to get away from using fossil fuels, whether it's oil or even natural gas, but especially away from coal, and we've got to stop poisoning the world's air, which belongs to all of us and we all breathe it. And he says this is one of the great things that we need to do if we're talking about world health. No, so you guys know more than I do about all this stuff, so I'm going to get off the air. I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay. I don't know that we know more than you do.
In fact, I'm pretty confident we don't know more than he does.
What I know is we're doomed. That's my new line. I will be preaching this line until we're doomed.
Oh, okay.
That's my new thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I am severely pathologically depressed. I can't understand how it is that Trump is going to get elected again, for example.
How did you manage to get out of bed this morning?
Falling. I fell out of bed.
Oh, okay. Right? All right. let's go to the phones. Harvey is next. Good morning.
Hi, Abe and Joe. Well, Alaska's experienced record-breaking heat waves.
Oh, yeah. The Alaskan swamp, as it were.
20 degrees above. And on June 26, France recorded the highest ever temperature of 113 degrees. Mm-hmm. In the middle of May, Pakistan has faced sweltering waves of heat that reached 123 degrees.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know it was that high.
And parts of India, there's a headline, parts of India, is it becoming too hot for humans? And the European Satellite Agency announced that June of this year was the hottest month ever recorded on Earth. And at the same time, President Trump has worked to promote coal, oil, gas, and nuclear, as well as roll back environmental rules that are accelerating the melting of the world's glaciers and polar caps, which will lead to sea rise. Meanwhile, President Trump wants to build a wall, not sea walls to protect our country's coastal areas, but walls across the desert, between Mexico and America, and if our coastal cities get flooded, there'll be sewage backups in our streets. Toilets, toilet waste will have nowhere to go. It'll back up. Fresh water supplies will be compromised. Transportation systems will grind to a halt, and we will suffer under Trump's administration and their lack of leadership in protecting us. And of course, you know, as I've mentioned many times, him and his administration are a wholly owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry. So it's time that we took a stand, start protecting our coastal areas, start ensuring our sewage and water systems that will work as the oceans go up. And also, ocean rise will lead to pressure on our coastal freshwater aquifers. They'll drive more salt water into our coastal freshwater aquifers, making our drinking water salty. So we really have to wake up, switch away from fossil fuels as fast as possible, divest from the fossil fuel industry as New York has. They divested their policemen and firemen funds from divested fuel and reinvested in renewable energies. We should alert and go to our city council meetings and work on every level to help slow climate destabilization, because Trump and his administration are the wrong way guys, and we don't want to start learning how to tread will be the next big trend. So it's time to really make a move, and I say it's time to get star powered. Let's get solar and help slow climate destabilization. Thanks,
well,
guys.
I think both of us agree, and probably most of our audience does. But here's the problem that I'm seeing: most people in this society are woefully ignorant of all these issues. Most people in our society are befuddled and confused, and in fact, the reason why I'm saying all these dark things about Trump getting elected and so on, and I don't really think that he will, but you know, I never know. I think what has really happened in our culture over the years is that people absolutely don't understand the relationship between democracy and progress, seriously. And I think that this is a very terrible situation. I can't believe that otherwise intelligent people from all classes, all castes, all sexes, etc., are actually going to fall for this horrible, horrible mess that's been going on for so long and is so obvious. And yet, I'm looking around and I'm thinking, oh man, this is like, I don't know, you know, it's like watching people play table tennis on the Queen Mary, which I think is over.
Yes.
Let me ask you this, caller. You just laid out this scenario, this prescription of what we need to do to address this problem. What is your prognosis? Do you think we will be able to manage that?
I think that whether we will be able to manage that or not, we have to do it. It's not a matter of choice anymore. For instance, the melting of the polar caps because of the intense melting, and you know, they always say, they seem to be melting faster than our computer models show. Well, the melting of the polar caps takes pressure off of the Earth's top and bottom, and it actually increases the movement of the world's tectonic plates. And where you are, you have the Cascadia subduction zone, which could be triggered by the weight loss of the polar caps. And you know, if you get a subduction zone, they create the biggest earthquakes on the planet, the magnitude 0.9. So that's another reason to get rolling on this. You don't want to trigger the Cascadia subduction zone.
Yeah, I think we agree. But got to remember one thing. We may be able to have mammoths, you know, big elephants.
Mm-hmm.
That might be so important that we just don't.
That's not going to happen, Joe.
Not going to happen.
No, you're just being silly.
So hey, no mammoths?
No mammoths.
The world is going to hell and we won't even get mammoths?
No, they're extinct. Hey, thank you, caller. I appreciate your input today.
Okay.
You know, I'm really happy right now, Joe, because I have the opportunity to tell you you're wrong. You said most Americans know nothing about this. That's not true, according to polling data.
Really?
Yeah.
Seriously.
I'm absolutely serious. According to a poll conducted by Gallup this March, 59% of Americans said the environment should be prioritized over energy production.
Wow. Well, that's important.
That's most Americans understanding the topic.
So what's the problem with the Democrats?
We know that. We've been over and over that ground. They're far too connected to moneyed interests who finance their reelection campaigns. The same thing's wrong with them that's wrong with the entire system.
Oh.
The only problem is they pretend to have a remnant of a conscience. It's just time to see them exercise it.
Really? I understand what you're saying. I don't want to become such a talker of doom and gloom that all of us give up, although it's tempting. I think that what really needs to happen is people need to learn the difference between that which can be done in the short term, like electing some fool Democrat, and what must be done in the long term, like changing the total culture and cultural awareness and the economic system. And I think these things can be done, and yet I don't see anybody doing it.
No, they don't. Again, for the same reason I just described.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones.
Yeah.
Arthur. That's Brian. Good morning, Brian.
Oh, Brian. You can call me Arthur, too. My only comment is that I wanted to say how much I appreciate, Abe, what you said of connecting the dots with the soccer team and Title IX, and those kind of stories are out there. I wish I could say more about those stories, but I know they're out there. There's lots of good news. There's lots of ways of connecting the dots on good things that our country has done and politics, policies that have worked right. And you bringing that out, that just gave me such a little light of hope. I'm also not a sportster, but I can't help but notice how people have paid attention to this. And you bringing that out, and that kind of news really needs to get out. I really appreciate the kind of shtick that you guys have, you know, Joe being Mr. Negative and everything, but we get a lot of negative, and the positive is out there. And I'm not Pollyanna, but the positive is out there, and we need to feed our souls with a little bit of that. And thank you, Abe. That was great.
Yeah, I just want to point out that we play roles. This is a performance form.
Really? I'm not sure what role I have.
Well,
all right.
You're the good guy.
I'm the good guy.
I'm the hardcore negativist.
Okay.
You're taking the easy way, Joe.
Well, yeah, it's a lot easier than what my poor partner has to do.
I conserve the energy.
Really?
Well, appreciate those comments. It just goes to show what happens when you empower previously disempowered portions of the population. They end up doing great things.
Yeah, and I think that more of that kind of news, which is out there in profusion, it just doesn't sell like the negative stuff. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you know, I just think that, I just think, seriously, that we are facing such enormous different kinds of crises, ranging from the environmental to the simple political, that it will take the organized active involvement of every citizen to turn this situation around. And I don't know.
Yeah, a part of it is how you frame the problem and how you approach the problem. Now, I look at this massive conversion away from fossil fuels to a renewable-based economy. And that's really what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, and interestingly, that could lead to even more wealth for the wealthy, oddly.
Oddly. But it also, if it's done right, can lead to a lot more wealth for the not wealthy. And this is an opportunity, especially if you get into the fine detail of the Green New Deal proposal as was submitted before Congress.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about going about this in a deliberately socially just way. Meaning that the government is going to be a direct employer of lots and lots of people the way it was during the New Deal, only this time, underrepresented demographics are not going to be ignored. This is an opportunity to lift everybody's boat, to use a much overused phrase. And it's a way for a lot of new wealth to be created as we transition away from the old economy to the new.
Well, I want to just emphasize that point. There is lots of money to be made in the new economy.
That's precisely what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yes. So you would think capital would go, oh, money.
Well, you see, there's two problems there. One is one we touched on earlier, and that is right now, those people who are profiting the most from the status quo don't want to change it. And right now, they hold more sway than all the rest of us do. That's a huge problem. Secondly, people look at the transitional period of this, which is probably going to be measured in decades, if we're being perfectly honest about it, in which things, life, the material standard of living that we've come to enjoy is probably going to decline. There's not going to be, for a period of time, as much energy cheaply available as it is now to produce all the stuff that we take for granted. So there's going to be some, by necessity, simplification of modern life.
But the zoos will have mammoths.
No, they will not.
They will not.
We may have to get by with a lot of things we take for granted. And frankly, I think for a lot of people, that's not going to be a problem. I mean, who out there can't look at their life and all the stuff they've accumulated over the years and say, I could have lived without a whole lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
But to a lot of people, that is frightening. That is really frightening, particularly among conservatives. And they just don't want to face that. In fact, it's so frightening that they've conflated that with an abandonment of Americanism itself and American values themselves. Don't take my pickup truck away from me, you commie. I'm an American. I have a right to have it. And what's more, it's part of my expression of being an American.
Speaking of commie, have you noticed the way...
No, wait. Just hang a second.
Okay, I'll wait.
Deeply ingrained pathology that we're going to have to wrestle with. Remember a few years ago when the Obama administration enforced new emissions restrictions on diesel fuel?
Yeah.
And those pickup truck driving folks messed with their rigs so they would emit even more thick black smoke?
I do remember
This is
that.
What I'm talking about. This is a deep pathology, this unwillingness to wrestle with the fact that, yes, your lifestyle is going to have to change. And a lot of people really can't deal with that.
Well, yeah, but you're not saying why it is. There's beyond the obvious behavior, the pathology, there is something else in our culture that is absolutely toxic.
And, oh, yes.
And that's really why I am, to the degree I am, mm-hmm. depressed. I don't understand how the liberals, so-called, can mess around so much and not get anything accomplished. I don't understand how people who are otherwise perfectly bright people, ordinary folk, but with intelligence, can allow this all to go down, and it's going to be one of these situations where it'll come to the wire, literally.
Yeah, probably.
And will anybody then say, oh, well, maybe, it just defeats my mind.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, my family and I went to the coast for the 4th of July. I just spent the day sitting and playing on the beach.
Yeah.
And for a good 2 hours of that day, there was a gentleman in a big pickup truck raised high up off the ground, with the rack and the lights and the guns and
those are so cool.
Right. But in the bed of his truck, he had planted a huge American flag, and he spent 2 hours driving back and forth across the sand with that big American flag streaming. Huh. And he was doing it down on the hard-packed sand near the water, right? So he's doing this between everybody who was sitting on the beach and the waves, and he was just doing it, embracing America, yay. I was sitting there going, you know what? You're doing that because you know, you're celebrating your country, but wrapped up in this is this belief that, yeah, I've got a right to do this. Nobody can tell me I can't put a flag in my truck and drive it up and down the beach. And I was imagining how that conversation, how that confrontation between the two of us might go, where I would, you know, he would say, well, you can't tell me not to do that. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, what you're doing is consumptive. It's wasteful. It's obnoxious. And really, it has no place if we're all going to survive together going forward.
But it's so American.
That's the problem, Joe. That's the pathology. We should be embracing our Americanness. Yes, we should be proud of our culture and our country. Yes, but we should be proud of it for reasons that have nothing to do with driving hugely polluting four-wheel drive vehicles up and down the beach with a flag in the bed of your truck. You know?
Yeah.
That's what we need to get away from.
Well, so you want to take away from me my four-wheel drive,
yes,
gigantic diesel truck?
Yes, unless you work in an occupation that requires you to have a four-wheel drive truck, in which case I want it to be an electric truck.
You're a troublemaker.
I am, yes. Let's go back to the phones.
Okay.
Who's next? Arthur, good morning.
Oh, hello, good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I've been listening to your excellent conversation.
Well, I hope you have something to add.
I hope so. First of all, to Joe, I'm having a mammoth burger right now.
Great. What's a mammoth burger, just so I know?
A mammoth burger is just like a giant beef burger.
Oh, okay.
Except only it's made from an extinct elephant.
Only it's made,
oh, it's a mammoth, like an elephant, mammoth burger. I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, but it's made with an extinct species.
Oh,
must
okay.
have been very expensive.
Actually, that leaves a low carbon footprint in general, so that's probably a good thing, because that goes right along with the theme of your program here.
I see.
Right, because you're eating it before it has a chance to decompose and turn into crude oil.
Correct. I got so many comments because your conversation is evolving so quickly, right?
Yeah.
As I was on hold listening, I'm like, I had a few notes like what I was going to talk about, and then I'm like, I don't know. First of all, I believe diesel is slightly more efficient thermodynamically than regular gasoline.
Yeah, but it's very toxic.
Oh, it's toxic all around. Yeah. I didn't say it was not toxic,
okay,
but it's slightly less toxic than gas because it's a different cycle, different type of fuel.
Yeah.
So it's slightly less toxic. And I have I got more to say on the toxicity of cars, which is also, if you're going to make fun of pickup trucks, stop driving your own vehicle, whatever size it is, altogether. But anyway, that's a little...
He has a flying car.
That's
right. Wings.
That's a bitch complaint. Listen, I'll get to my two main points, so to give other callers an opportunity, all right?
Sure.
All right.
All right. The first thing is... you guys are talking national, which is important. You know, Trump's messing things up. Congress obviously can't control Trump. Okay, because they all voted for the Iraq war, so their hands are dirty, you know. Okay, so my new view is local. Hmm. So what can I do locally, right? Because you're talking about the environment. Okay, so... I called a phone number, and I found out that the city of Portland owns many high-rise buildings, like 10, 20 stories tall, right?
Mm-hmm.
You with me?
Yeah.
Okay, now they have these things called wind turbines that make electricity just from wind, right? And the... one of the main costs of the wind turbine is have the tower to put the wind turbine up high enough to where it can spin around and get electricity, right?
Right.
Okay, so I called Councilor Hardesty from the city council, right? And I asked her how many wind turbines there were on top of each tall city building. Like the really high up city buildings where the wind blowing, if you go up on top of a building, the wind's blowing all the time up there, right? I asked the new councilor how many wind turbines there were on top of Portland's city buildings, right? Mm-hmm, so guess. Okay, I'm going to have you guess what the answer is.
I couldn't possibly guess.
I'm going to guess the answer is no.
Go ahead.
Give me a number between 0 and 1.
Well, you know, it could be an infinite number between 0 and 1. That isn't what you mean.
Okay, give me a whole number between 0 and 1 and take a wild guess. Right. I'll give you a clue.
There isn't a whole number between 0 and 1. Why don't you tell us? Tell us the answer.
0.
Okay.
It was 0. So the city council, right, talks about going fossil free by 2025, whatever the goal is there, right? But the reality is, there's not a single wind turbine on any of Portland City's buildings.
Well, wait a minute. I don't know about Portland City buildings because I don't know what buildings specifically you're referring to. But there are many. Well, let me finish. There are many buildings in Portland, particularly high rises, that when I just look have wind turbines on top of them.
Oh,
furthermore,
no. I'm not talking about all the buildings. I'm just talking about the city of Portland owns.
Well, I do
that's
know
the ones I'm talking about.
Engineer Ray just
correct,
pointed out.
Correct me.
Engineer Go Ray ahead. Just pointed out to us that there are wind turbines being tested on top of the Tillicum Crossing Bridge. I can't speak as to the city-owned buildings downtown, but what you're saying makes sense. If the city owns these properties, what's stopping them from installing clean energy generation at the top?
Well, it's certainly a good idea, and it's certainly an initiative that would have both symbolic and real consequences.
Well, it would have not symbolic. It would have immediate air quality.
Yes.
Because to make electricity, you burn fossil fuel.
Yes.
Okay. And you're talking about air quality. Your previous caller talked about air quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely agree with all of them and you. But the city already has the buildings in place. And so the height issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like a tower, you don't need to build a tower. You already got the building existing. So the entire building could be powered by wind turbines. That's my first thought, but I'll let you digest. I got a quick second thought because I'm hogging. I'm a radio hog right now. I don't want to be a radio hog. Listen, I got one more issue.
All right, make
bring
it fast.
Up you very,
All right.
One more quick one. Ready?
Yes.
Okay. The city of Portland, $15 per hour minimum wage. Okay, have you heard of that issue?
Yeah, indeed, yes.
And they're trying to creep up to it. Like every year they increase it by like 50 cents to get up to $15 per hour.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to make a comment. $20 per hour tomorrow, not next year, not the next year after that. Not the next year after that, but $20 per hour tomorrow. That would go a long ways in solving a lot of current social local problems. Not every problem, obviously, but some of them.
All right.
All right.
Thank you for the call.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. This is the Abe and Joe Talk radio program on
yes.
KBOO 90.7 FM. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, we hear from Lawrence Wilkerson on U.S. invasions, occupations, coup, and sanctions in Latin America. And at 10 on Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, we will go to Baja, where the organization Border Angels is working in the city of Tijuana with immigrants from Central America. 11, it's Peace, Love, and Soup. Tave and Brian discuss Chile and interview Jay Hurdle, also known as Suggy Ponzon, about his music. And don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play.
It's a good thing.
It
People
is.
Can just, you know... Anytime.
Yeah, indeed. Jack writes into the Facebook page to say he's addressing a previous caller. Sorry, Harvey, your weight of ice at the poles hypothesis is wrong. Arctic sea ice floats on the Arctic Ocean. It doesn't pressure any subduction faults.
That's true.
But J&A like your message, so you can get away with such poppycock on their show. Moreover, they don't know anything about climate science.
Who's the they in that sense?
You and me.
Well, actually, I don't agree with that. I know a lot about climate science.
Well, Jack says you don't.
Okay.
All right.
He must be right. He's a listener.
He goes on to say, Joe, as for the mastodons, no, you won't get those. You'll only get a mile of ice on your homestead unless the Anthropocene does what we're being told it may well have already done.
Well, in that case, I'd have to agree.
No. Yeah, see, he's saying, well,
Yeah, I'm just being silly. Sometimes I'm silly.
He's saying eventually there'll be another ice age that will cover this part of North America, unless the Anthropocene era, which is what geologists are calling the era we live in now,
right,
does what we believe it's doing, which is heating the planet unnaturally.
Well, as one famous philosopher said, in the end, we're all dead.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people have said that. Yeah. But think about that for a second. The era, the geologic era, which geologic eras are measured in big, big, big amounts of time.
Right.
Right? Is now called the Anthropocene, meaning the age of humans, because what we are doing is having a measurable and visible and long-term impact on the geologic state of the planet. Let that sink in a little bit.
Well, you're not cheering me up.
No. Maybe Pear will do that. Pear, you're next. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. You know, while I was waiting, Abe said a lot of the stuff I was going to say.
Oh, well, then, you know.
But I would add, though, it's, you know, we are going in a time of shortages, and it's not just the guys in their big trucks that are going to have to give up a few toys. It's society at large. This whole thing about robotics, you know, we're projecting a future where robots will kind of do everything. And I don't think that's going to happen. There's all these uses for...
I agree. First of all, I am not interested in any kind of intimacy with a machine.
Oh, that's that is the weirdest thing yet. But anyway, we're going to really have to prioritize a lot. And so I just want to... I think that's my point.
Okay.
It's, you know, the oil in the ground took millions of years to form. In just 200 years, we used up half of it, and the other half can't be used because it'll wreck the climate. So there we are. Anyway,
we are.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for the call.
Mike, you're next.
Good morning, KBOO.
Yeah.
Good morning.
There's a lot to say, so I'm just going to say thank you for KBOO, and keep up trying to do the good work.
My negativity doesn't bother you?
Oh, no, I get your spiel. I get the spiel.
Okay.
I'm not sure everyone does, but that's, you know, that's to be expected.
Well, I have a very dark view because things are dark.
Well, I'm cynical, too. Have either of you guys heard about discussion or read the, I don't know, 5-year-old, 6-year-old Ralph Nader talks and books about, you know, it's getting to the point where we need our own billionaires?
No.
Oh, okay.
All right. Anyway, what about the billionaire who likes 14-year-old girls? That's never mind. I don't want to go there. I'm sorry I brought it up.
I don't know. Okay, I'm confused how that has something to do with Ralph Nader, but
well, I hope it doesn't have anything to do with Ralph Nader.
Well, what's on your mind?
Well, it's just interesting. I mean, I just assume everyone understands that the real wealth is from the masses, but it's hard to get us organized. So I wonder if you think we need to scare the powers that be and be the exception and to get them to do something. Like Roosevelt surrounded himself with really good people who I think were well-intentioned.
Well, I don't...
He was able to communicate with upper class and say, hey, dudes, the pitchforks are coming if you don't, you know...
Yeah, but he didn't have to scare the ruling class. The ruling class was scared because there had been a terrible screw-up in the organization of capitalism.
Yeah. So, and they're not so scared anymore, yeah.
So now the system is more, what do you want to call it, more... flexible, and there's not as much apparent linkage between wealth and intolerable conditions. Obvious linkage.
Yeah, not yet. Yeah, okay.
Anyway.
All right, thanks. I hate to be cynical, but there it is. Thanks.
Hey, thank you for the call.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Marie.
Marie, the dawn is breaking. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. What I'm concerned with is what's called the crisis at the border, and the absolute ineffectualness, even of very good men like Merkley or Blumenauer, who at first called attention to it, they've been unable to do anything. It only gets worse every day. I feel as if there are not enough good forces in the country, even in the face of something as appalling as this, to help. So that's what I have to say.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the comment. I have a comment about that. If you had asked me a few years ago, how was it that the German people seemed to, by and large, stand idly by while people were being murdered? And my answer then was, well, they probably didn't know about it, or they didn't, not enough of them knew about it, or worse yet, they didn't care because the people who were being murdered were the other. I would say that what we have right now is a combination of all that again. Persons of color, persons who speak Spanish rather than English, are the other. And, it, you know, the situation is such that we have a, we actually have a president who is absolutely willing to hurt as many people as possible in order to further his weird political goal, which I think is mostly about him. I just wanted to throw that out there.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Sue writes to the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, to say, I've done research on wind turbines in urban areas, and they also have at Portland State, and there's a reason you don't see them. Solar is much more productive, but I'd love to hear from someone from PSU who has done the science. On the web, they say, entrepreneurs who have tried to push small wind turbines find it doesn't work out. Not sure what the truth is there.
Well, does that mean that it costs more to build a turbine than you get, than the yield is?
That's what I'm thinking. Or that the bang for the buck is just not there to make it capitalistically viable.
I'm not sure that's true, but
I'm not sure either. But I think we've just muddied the waters even further.
Yeah, well, I like solar because it's always, you know, you got half the day it's there.
It's true. Let's go to Edie.
Edie, you're on the
good
air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tying in everything you've been saying so far, there is more money. It is better for the economy in addition to money. That we are sustainable and just, including the people that have been most vulnerable and most harmed by the fossil fuel nuke industry. Mm-hmm. And we are having actions that people can do locally to make a difference globally. Today, 3:30 at the southwest corner of Pioneer Courthouse Square, gather with Occupy ICE, and then go to two institutions, a bank and Microsoft, that that are making money off of destroying the environment, the economy, and social justice.
Yeah, can you repeat? Can you repeat the times and the locations so that our audience today, can follow?
Pioneer Courthouse Square. 3:30 to okay. meet, and then we will go to two other locations, a bank and Microsoft, because they are making money off of destroying the environment and fossil fuels and human trafficking and the horrific private prisons and what they're doing with ICE to children and families. And Microsoft, that has facial recognition software to increase the control of the public who are rebelling against things. And the solution is be there in person, build community, be seen, and then move your money from the banks and move it to community credit unions. One of the best in the state for decades has been now what's called Advantis, but there are several other community credit unions. Three, a group that is recognizing the urgency and importance and the interconnectivity of climate change, social justice, democracy, and a healthier, sustainable economy is called Extinction Rebellion Portland, or PDX. Go mm-hmm. to the Extinction Rebellion PDX website and find out more today, tonight, 6:00. Will be a meeting of a weekly meeting of folks, and there's different affinity groups. You have both the larger global view as well as regenerative culture, where we are interacting within ourselves, with each other, and with other groups to create the world that is reverent and loving and fair, so that we do not have that sense of separation, the other, that allows racism, classism, etc., pollution, and that we are instead practicing now the reverent, caring, joyous, creative, just, interconnected, healthy, healing way of interacting with each other and society and following the rules of nature that heal and transform. At the same time, we are finding ways in which people can work in small affinity groups and a larger connection in a solidarity with others. This whole week, Extinction Rebellion and others are in solidarity with those who are working for immigrant, refugee, asylum seekers' rights and to abolish ICE. And then each day there will be these events that you can be seen, that you can participate cross culture and cross topic, because they all do interconnect. And then on the 11th at 4:30 at Cherry Swamp Plaza, me with Portland's resistance to demand police accountability and a better police contract so that we then have more rights that are more protected for our protesters, that we would then show up the 11th and the 12th for liberty, for Lights for Liberty, about immigrant rights. So it all interconnects. There's something you can do locally that is globally effective.
Well, that sounds pretty great.
Thank you for the information. I guess we have time for a couple more people.
We do. I want to say a little bit about what she was talking about. Extinction Rebellion Portland's got a Facebook page at which you can find all the information about upcoming gatherings and actions and such. And that looks like a really good resource. I'm going to have to learn more, but I really appreciate that, caller. Thank you for hooking us up with that. And JF tweets to us at HonestAbe72. He tweets, "And Joe is not so obtuse."
What's that mean?
Let me continue. Geneticists are attempting to resurrect mammoths.
See?
Albeit they admit the creature will likely be more elephant than mammoth.
Yeah.
So they're working on it.
Yeah.
Bringing back extinct creatures. What could possibly go wrong?
Right.
I seem to recall a series of Hollywood blockbusters about just that question. JF also tweets in to say, as for the United States women's national soccer team, it's a lot more than just pay. And he has provided a chart. This is pretty shocking, actually. Yeah. Both the men's and women's teams play 20 exhibition games per year. For each win, the men get $17,625. The women get $1,350.
Oh, really?
For each loss, the men get $5,000. The women get nothing.
Oh, come on.
Oh, yes. Each player for making the World Cup team, the men get a bonus of $68,750. The women get $15,000. The team pay for the World Cup performance, the men for losing, getting knocked out in the round of 16. They actually didn't even make the last World Cup. So this is two World Cups ago for the men.
Right.
They got $9 million for the team. The women for winning got $2
million. Gee, that does seem inequitable, doesn't it?
Yes. Highly, highly inequitable. Yes. So thank you for illustrating that for us, John. Let's go back to the phones. Greg, you're next.
Good morning. Thank you for your show. I really appreciate it. And Joe, I'm with you all the way on the solar thing. I'd like to address, thank Sue for her research in the wind. And to the gentleman that suggested putting wind turbines on high buildings, I think he should read up on the subject and actually learn about it.
I think so.
So that he can become more educated. I think education, like you said, Joe, is one of the main problems right now with the ignorance that's going on out there, the stupidity. It's amazing. It's amazing. And but rather than getting entirely bummed out about the whole situation, I think people can see the light and realize that it affects them now, everything. And, you know, if they want to be cheap about it, then they should understand the economics of doing things correctly and how quickly things can pay back and turn around. I think, you know, it's all doable. No magic bullet needed. You know, if there is something that comes, you know, around like superconducting conductors or something like that.
Well,
that would be a big help, or the magic battery or whatever.
Whatever.
You know?
But here's the thing: there's nothing that we could think of that isn't probably doable. The question is: are people, ordinary people, aware of what can be done, and do they have the motivation to do it?
And do we have the political will to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly it, political will. And as far as I think, just real quickly on the whole Hitler taking over and the Nazis and all that stuff, you know, one, it was described to me as like slicing the bologna. Things happened slice by slice, you know, law by law. Nothing happened as a tidal wave, but just a, you know, a gradual change. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you find yourself with the tide, you know, with the water around your neck, you know. It doesn't all come in necessarily in one wave. And so, and that's why. And then, of course, Hitler, you know, he went after the people who people didn't like, the gypsies, the people with mental health problems, and the Jews. He demonized all those folks. So pretty easy to see how it happened, really.
Well, looking, you're partially right, back, looking, but he used enormous propaganda efforts to demonize all of those peoples, particularly the Jewish people. But you're right.
So anyways, and the wind turbines, I mean, look around the valley. You go up on Council Crest, you see any wind turbines anywhere around? No. The only one good-sized wind turbine is on Mount Angel, and that works for them. Otherwise, all the wind turbines, I mean, go down 84 the other day. We saw the blades being shipped down to the eastern Oregon. That's where they go. That's where it makes sense. You do it on big scale. You don't put them on buildings. Put solar on buildings on the rooftops if you want to. There are already examples of solar on rooftops downtown, you know. And even then, it doesn't make a lot of sense because the roofs are such a small area compared to the number of floors and square footage total. So, I mean, study up, folks. It's just some math. It's not that hard.
Well, as Barbie said, math is hard.
Oh, it is not. You take it step by step. And you take your time. You know,
okay, I was being outrageous. Okay. You're right.
I
it isn't that.
I know. But,
being outrageous,
but,
also being sexist.
Yeah, sexist.
You know, it, what part of the problem with schools are is that they want to rush you through things instead of letting people take their time and understand stuff. You know, when you got an 11-week term to understand wind power, how much of that 700-page book are you going to get through? That's exactly what I was doing at OIT. You know, we never finished the book. We only got into the meaty parts that were made sense.
Oh.
So you have to have the time. You have to have the inclination to do it. You're right. I mean, people are not interested. They'd rather play games or whatever, drink beer, for God's sake. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's very unproductive going on out there. So, got to turn it around.
Newsflash, college students are sometimes unproductive.
Students are unproductive, yeah, a lot, because they're blowing off all that stress.
Exactly right. Hey, listen, thank you for the call. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, we got some more people.
Yeah, let's get one more in if we can. Robbie, you're next.
Hi, I just wanted to say really quick two topics. We were talking about, somebody brought up the minimum wage and how we should go directly to like $20. I'm not against raising the minimum wage. I just think it's not the solution. I think it's a quick band-aid on the problem, because basically what happens is in places, cities where they raised it to 15, you know, you go to Chipotle now, and you know, I don't actually go to Chipotle, I don't know why I use this reference, but you know, it's like $10 and $12 for a burrito. What happens is when we raise the minimum wage, you know, the greedy people just start, you know, the greedy capitalists, I should say, they just immediately start raising the cost of living when we have more money. So it's like we need to find a better solution. And I'm not against raising the minimum wage. I think it's, you know, everybody should be getting paid a livable, you know, wage. But I think there's what I'm going towards is the Federal Reserve issuing, you know, debt in the form of, you know, cash. You know, the Nixon shock basically weaseled out the rest of that fiat currency and made it all cloud-based. But, you know, if we don't address the situation at where the cause is, we're just going to keep having this inflation hit by raising our minimum wage. That's the one point that I wanted to bring up. But
okay. See, I've investigated this, and the studies I've read show that the effect on minimum wage in local areas where it has been raised to $15 is negligible.
Yeah, and I've seen similar statistics. But we're kind of out of time. I want to make one last thing. I really would like to hear from people who were active last Saturday. I guess it was last Saturday. In a demonstration against, I'm not sure what, but they were.
Go on.
Well, anyway, yeah. I want to know what the logic of it is. I want to know what actually happened. There is only one article about it in the major press, which is by this guy who got ill-treated there, who managed to get his point of view on Lars Larson, my favorite talk show host, the well-armed Lars Larson, and then managed to get his point of view published in the Wall Street Journal. So I want to hear from people.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for everybody for contributing to the conversation today. That was fun. We should do that more often. We should just shut up and let people
talk. No. Why would they? Yeah. Okay.
All right. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on 90.7 KBOO. Become a member. Help support this station because you love it. I know you do. Go to KBOO.fm and click on the donate button. We'll be back at you next week.
It's coming through a crack in the wall.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Voices of a People's History, a movement of movements, on Wednesday, July 10th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Revolution Hall in Portland. Voices of a People's History celebrates diverse movement leaders by sharing their stories. Members of our community perform readings of notable speeches and essays from inspiring figures past and present, a radically empowering opportunity to hear the echoes of history in the present day. Again, that's Voices of a People's History, a movement of movements, on Wednesday, July 10th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Revolution Hall, 1300 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, we hear from Lawrence Wilkerson on U.S. invasions, occupations, coups, and sanctions in Latin America. At 10 on Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, Dennis goes to Baja, where the organization Border Angels is working in the city of Tijuana with immigrants from Central America. And at 11, it's Peace, Love, and Soup. Tave and Brian discuss Chile and interview High Hurdle, a.k.a. Suggy Ponzon, about his music. Don't forget, you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to KBOO.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Big Float, a parade, float, and beach party happening July 13th on the Willamette River in downtown Portland. The Big Float is a movement disguised as a party that features music by Blitz and Trapper and Red Ray Frazier. It is a celebration of our city's river and a benefit for the human